Thank you. Thanks. Hello. Thank you very, very much. It's really a pleasure to be here among friends. It's awesome when you think of where Lenox has started and where we are today. It's just awesome. That's due to many of you, and we're just excited to be here. Jeffrey Moore, in his books and lectures and speaking, has carefully identified at various stages that all products must go through in what he calls the technology adoption cycle. And Moore tells us that before a product can be widely accepted, it must cross a chasm, which is a broad expanse that separates emerging technologies from broad adoption within the business community. The question that stares us in the face when we consider Linux is, when will Linux cross the chasm? Or in other words, when will it be accepted as a viable solution across the entire IT landscape? Those of us who have tracked the rise of Linux from the infant operating system to the present day, I think when I started with it, there were like 20 or 30 names on the kernel list and news groups and related to Linux. We are astonished, really, and grateful to see the rapidity with which it has been embraced by the development community around the world. We're also beginning to see the attention that's been given to by all of the industry giants and major OEMs and ISVs. Yet, for all this enthusiastic response, we must ask ourselves, when will Linux cross the chasm? In other words, as Moore says, when will it enter the bowling alley, the tornado, or mainstream, high-volume, universal adoption? You're probably aware of the giant step that we've taken in this direction recently. I think most of you have been waiting for me to mention it, so we'll mention it right at the beginning. That is the acquisition of the Santa Cruz Operations Server and Professional Services Division. Let me tell you, we're absolutely thrilled by it, and it means a lot to the Linux community as a whole. And it says a lot about the Linux community, and we'll try to explain what the significance of that is. The reason that this is such a big announcement to Caldera and the Linux community is that Linux and Unix complement each other. And the perception now that Linux is not ready for prime time in major enterprises has to be seriously reconsidered. Since the SCO announcement, people have asked me if we're going to abandon our Linux roots and move to some sort of hybrid operating system. My answer is very, very forceful. No, we won't. Okay? Why should we abandon the future that we helped to create? The acquisition, however, is going to change the industry and the way that the world communicates and deploys their platforms. Industry leaders are already calling the acquisition an industry-changing event, the beginning of a new era, the end of the old, and we're going to explain its significance today. Moore insists that for technology to cross the chasm, create what's called a 100% solution to the customer. Now, let me ask the question. Where does Linux provide a 100% solution in the business environment? Clearly we've made, as an ISP platform, as an internet server platform, we've made significant inroads. But where does it create and become a total solution to the business environment? I believe, again, leveraging that foothold, that where Linux drives and becomes a 100% solution is in this concept that's evolving because of the internet, where the services are being allowed to be broken up, to be optimized, to be customized to specific hardware or software applications. IDG calls these specialized servers, but in many ways, they're the same servers, just optimized and customized to either the hardware or software that we see today, but they're much more economical. So this is the area where I believe Linux will penetrate and move across that chasm to a degree that I don't believe we can even comprehend today. Linux will dominate this space for a number of reasons. First of all, the open source nature of Linux allows it to be optimized and customized more than any other type of OS in the history of the IT industry. Also, these devices have to be extremely stable, and they have to be internet-enabled, and they have to be manageable. The collaborative model of open source also provides the lowest cost alternative where most of the commercial OSs can't even compete in this space. So, but even in this space, and not to mention the entire OS platform adoption, are there areas where Linux needs to improve to become a 100% solution to the business customer? Most Linux executives, OEMs, ISVs, and observers would say that the answer is yes. There are areas that we need to improve. Here's a list, and we'll go through each one and explain. First of all, global infrastructure. Major hardware and software manufacturers are reluctant to pour millions of dollars into a rollout of a Linux-based product on a global scale because it costs a significant amount of money to do that when they have to deal with regional Linux strengths, because the Linux that they have here may not be quite what the Linux is here. And if they have to take on the entire support burden of that infrastructure crossing geographic boundaries, they'll be reluctant to do so. Also, clearly, when we talk about global infrastructure, what about the corporate businesses that want to begin to deploy a solution? They don't deploy it usually in a single office. They want to deploy it across the broad spectrum of businesses. So they need support infrastructure in every major market that they are in order to have confidence to deploy Linux on a much grander scale in as we cross the chasm. They want then a global Linux vendor with global support infrastructure. The SCO acquisition gives us a truly global presence. We become the only Linux company with service, marketing, sales infrastructure in every major market around the world. That's significant. Currently, Linux does not scale to the high-end needs of the data center. Linux is a marvelous platform. We all love it. But it does not scale to the high-end data center needs. So we don't have a single platform that goes from the thin clients all the way up to the high-end data enterprise needs. Other OS platforms in the industry do. If we want to be an alternative, we have to have that same scalability, that same breadth. Now, may I suggest that a single OS kernel cannot scale. It cannot meet all of those diverse data center needs. Okay? We're already seeing that. Embedded kernels are significantly different than what we ship in most of the Linux distributions. So the fact that we may need yet another kernel, as other OS manufacturers do, where we have multiple kernels, is something that if we want to be a global player and a major player, we will have to consider. Caldera's answer to this is an open internet platform, a completely open, scalable environment utilizing the single platform of Linux across multiple kernels to scale from the thinnest of clients to the clustering needs of the largest data center. We see that there are no single kernel can meet all the diverse needs in this marketplace. We want to preserve choice, letting IT professionals select the operating system kernel that will best suit their needs, but provide common technology, common services across multiple kernel environments. This isn't a lot different than what Microsoft does, okay? But we can do it much, much better with Linux and Unix. Linux is the definitive development platform across all of these kernels. The server technology, ladies and gentlemen, can never be... If you think about it, servers and server applications cannot be sold through a retail channel. It has never worked. It will never work. The complexities that's involved there are just too great, no matter how easy we make the operating system to install. So to attract ISVs, and to Linux, a robust network of technical specialists who know how to deploy, manage, and administer Linux and associated applications as needed. Businesses also need help. The single biggest reason why Linux is not being adopted today is not applications. And there's a number of surveys that we'll talk about. It is technical knowledge on how to develop, deploy, and administer Linux. So these technical specialists will help significantly in deploying the total turnkey solution to their customer base, or host it for them as the model changes. Business customers tell us that they'd be more aggressive in the adoption of Linux if they could purchase and obtain support through the same distribution channel that they use for everything else. The SCO acquisition gives us more than 15,000 knowledgeable, trained resellers, ISVs, and support staff worldwide. This infrastructure would have taken us millions of dollars and years to develop. Application developers want a common Linux platform. They cannot afford to maintain 4 or 5 or 6 different flavors of Linux. And it doesn't take much for them to have to run through an entire testing cycle. And if they have to test it, it's a separate platform that they have to support. They won't do it, not for long. So we want a port once, run anywhere interface, not a multitude of flavors of Linux. Caldera is committed to Linux standard base. You're going to see significantly more investment on our time and effort to bring that about with the acquisition. Businesses need a platform also that adheres to open internet standards. Why? Why is that so critical? Because they have to interoperate and communicate and administer the investments they already have. And so if they bring in disparate systems, they have to have the open internet protocols to help manage that, like TCP/IP, XML, OpenSLP, Java. We have to embrace more than just the standards of the Linux community. Our goal is to promote, encourage, and establish open standards that will maximize application development and business use. In that way, Linux will cross the chasm. The entire financial community is always asking us, and will continue to ask us as a community, how do you make money? Okay? There are many people, this is going to be very controversial, but I'm going to say it because it's the honest truth. Many people are saying it's a service model. It's all services. Let me tell you something. Without Linux, which is a product or technology, there would be no services. Okay? Products have always driven services. Always. And people don't buy just service. They buy a product or a solution. And that drives the need for services. So how do you create a model that is based around more of a product-centric model? What is it that you're buying if the source code is free? Well, there's significant value in packaging and productizing Linux. I refer to the bottled water. Why do we buy bottled water? Sometimes you pay a premium. I was in Beijing, and I paid a lot of money for bottled water, and I was perfectly happy to do it. Why? Safety, convenience, all of these things. It's a trusted environment that I can deploy. So, packaging is important. So how do we make a model that gives us some sort of distinction, some sort of value contribution based on products? We call it open access. What we're suggesting is that we develop, we innovate, and we contribute back in a continuous cycle so that people look to us to be the innovators, to be the one who is moving technology forward. We're not co-opting the Linux community. We're not saying we're going to dictate to the community what is or what isn't going to be deployed. What we're suggesting is that we will innovate. We know where we need to go. And we will innovate and continuously give back to the community. Now, will we give everything back under GPL? The answer is no. Why? It's not that much of what we do will be given back under GPL. We like GPL, but it's not the end-all, cure-all. There are other open source licenses. What our commitment is, every technology we own, we will provide source code to under an open source license. Okay? We will choose the license that makes the most business and technological sense for the technology. Sometimes GPL doesn't make sense if you're looking at trying to cross a chasm. In other cases, it makes perfect sense. So what we're saying is a commitment that we will continue to innovate and continue to give back. There will be some times where we hold on to it. We may even maintain ownership of some, but we'll provide open access to the source. Why would we maintain ownership? Is ownership bad? No, it's not. If you have open access to the source and the ability to do what you need to do, ownership is not bad. In fact, it protects quality. In fact, if you look at the GPL license, it has an element of ownership to it. Why? It protects it. It protects the model. And we need to preserve that. So what we're saying is, technologies will be developed and given to the community based on what makes business and technological sense. The key is timing. In many instances, the technology will be providing back for developing it. We'll actually develop some of the technologies under GPL in an open source fashion as well. It just gives us a little bit more flexibility. Kaldera will continue to be the leader in innovation in the open source community and industry at large using this open access model while preserving shareholder value. Applications. It is a truism that businesses don't buy operating systems and never have. They purchase solutions. They purchase applications. Now with the SCO acquisition, Kaldera can offer thousands of business-hardened applications running on industry-standard hardware that run on Unix. We own the technology to make that seamless to move it to Linux. So all of those dentist office and hotel applications and all the many thousands of applications that exist will soon be Linux applications without forcing them to move. Okay? That's what we'll do with these applications. We'll commit them to move. Now, what about other new application development? What we're doing there is we have Java. If you haven't seen our early access CD, please get it. We've hotwired Hotspot into the browser. It's 5 times faster than any other browser on Linux, and it's faster than Windows, okay, because it provides that technology. So what does this mean? It brings thousands of new applications to Linux, to the business commercial environment. We also have a wonderful relationship with Emprise. We're ecstatic that they're getting ready to move the Delphi platform onto Linux. Do you realize what impact that will have? What that means for commercial enterprise development environments? Kaldera intends to be the develop on, deploy on internet platform for commercial applications on high volume hardware. Management. You may have seen, again, a recent issue in network computing that pinpoints the greatest roadblocks to Linux implementation. In the study called the Linux Challenge, more than 30% of the respondents found the greatest impediment to Linux impediment to Linux implementation. You notice I didn't write this speech. Is, can you guess, support. Ladies and gentlemen, support. The second greatest challenge is closely related, the lack of qualified Linux support technicians. Did it say applications? No. Research estimates that 1 million Linux servers were shipped in 1999 and probably more than 20 million Linux desktop computers today. Newsweek, this is another wonderful statistic. Newsweek reported that there are just short of 200 million internet users today. The number is increasing at a rate of 100 million users a year. Okay, now, we believe that most of those users, a good percentage, will come onto the internet using these specialized servers and internet client devices, running Linux. Now, if you're a LAN administrator, I'd be committing Harry Carey. Why? You're talking about devices coming into your network, not one at a time, but potentially 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, hundreds coming into the network and going out of the network, right, as we move into a mobile computing environment. So, how in the world do we manage these devices? We go by system? We don't have the time, resources, or cycles to go in on a system-by-system basis to do management. It just will not work. It will not scale to the internet. You will see in a moment that Caldera has solved these management challenges. We will enable the open internet platform to become the primary way for extending the internet. Okay. Clearly, I've said a lot. I actually, there's some people who have requested that we actually do some printing. They want the speaker notes with all my chicken scratch, but they want the speaker notes so we can have a meeting right after. So I'm going to, while we conclude here, I'm going to have Mike Wilson. Can you handle that for us? Great. Your mic's not on, Mike.
Small minor problem here.
Mike has a mic problem.
No, not a mic problem. A printer, actually, a setup problem.
A setup problem. You know what? It needs to be plugged in.
No, actually.
A setup problem.
I'll tell you what. Why don't we call Calvin?
All right, that's true. We're having problems here. Hold on, just a second. Calvin, we have on booth duty. At least he's supposed to be on booth duty. Hold on. See if he can help us out.
I'm going to go get this.
Hello? Calvin. Hey, Calvin, are you over at the booth?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
Hey, Calvin, we've got hundreds of people out here in the audience, and we're trying to print out. Whoa, what happened to the printer? Union labor. We're trying to print out my speaker notes. Is there any way that you can help us out? Do you have to run over here, or can you?
Well, don't you have another printer there somewhere?
You know what? Hold on. Yeah. Hey, there's one. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, I think I can. Hold on a sec. Let me look at that. Man, I can't believe this. I come to a show to go and attend the sessions, and they want me to help them with their hardware problems. Let's see here. I'm going to pull up. He's got his printer here in our system. And I'm going to go in here. And I think he's hooked up here to the HP 1 printer up there on stage. So I'm going to come in here, and I'm going to change this to the HP 2 printer. Save that in there and go and notify his system up there that that's changed. So, yeah, that should do it. Let's get back to what I was doing here. There we go. Okay. Yeah, that should be going now. Why don't you give that a try?
Okay, Kevin. We'll take a look and see if it's going to work. Yeah, make sure it's plugged in. We're waiting.
Not updating.
Is this it? Hey.
Oh, sorry, I'd lose you?
Yeah, Calvin.
Yeah, hold on, let me double check that again. Oh, maybe I lost my connection here. Let's see what we got. I'll save that. All right. Okay, why don't you give that a try?
Okay. How's the show going, by the way?
The booth's really busy.
Yeah.
It's bad. It's a nightmare here.
Good thing that you're working hard.
Minor difficulty here. Calvin, why don't you come up and let's...
Yeah, let's... Okay. Come on up. Calvin Gainsworth is our lead engineer on a project that we've been working on called Cosmos. And clearly that was simply going to be a print cap modification.
Yeah, what we were trying to do there is just modify your print cap file.
Okay.
And on the system here, which is, of course, a very simple thing to do, and probably hopefully anybody here would be able to go in, change the print cap entry, and restart your print daemon on there, and you'd be printing to a different machine. So
what about with 300 machines?
Well, sure. If you know, it's one thing to have one person mad at you and saying, I can't print, but if you've got an entire floor of people that are trying to, you know, their printer got taken and they want to move over to this different printer, how are you going to manage that? Well, right. To go into all those machines is going to take you several days. So this will allow you to go in and just do it in a directory-based system and then affect all the systems that you want to change. So,
awesome. Why don't you give us a demo on what this can do for us.
I hit a start. That's why it didn't work. We didn't do that after we were bidded.
Let's get this going. Okay, we just need to some minor setup things here. We didn't have set up.
That's why the printer didn't print?
That's right.
It always happens this way, isn't it? I mean, only in a keynote. But the nice thing is it's all live.
We'll dance or something.
Okay. No, they don't want me to dance. They don't want me to sing.
There we go.
Oh, yeah, we could do that.
I think we're ready, though.
Actually, why don't you go ahead and update it again? Because we've got the back end.
Okay, why don't we? I'll show you on machine three here exactly what I was going to do. We've got here. We're actually looking at the Cosmos console here. It's a completely web-based system that we're looking at. And what I was actually doing over here, and that's
what he was using is this is a marvelous little device from Compaq that was a browser on the handheld device. And so all he was doing was the same console using one of these wireless handheld devices.
So what I went to do is I went in. We have a policy set up for our printer here, and inside the printer, I've got it defined to the machine that I want to print to. And the one we had here was HP1. That one's HP2. So I'm just going to save this and resubmit that change. And now that his machine is set up and going, he'll be able to go out and now print that document over there for him. So why don't you go get that now?
Hey, it's working.
Okay.
Awesome.
Why don't we talk about print test? One of the things that I'd really like to show, though, we've got all this fantastic hardware that's been donated over here. IBM, HP, and Compaq have all donated some pretty significant equipment. And what we'd like to do, I'd like to sponsor a little game fest tonight, and I'd like to actually install a shareware version of Descent on there.
That's some great hardware to run games, Mike.
Yeah, it's an ultimate gaming platform there, right? But I'd like to install Descent on these boxes. And first of all, on machine two here, I want to see if I have Descent loaded here. And it looks like I do not. So I'd like to get it installed on the machines over here on my laptop as well. Tell me how Cosmos can help me do this.
Okay, it's really simple to do this in Cosmos. If we go back to machine three here, we have what are known as profiles inside of Cosmos. It's on machine three.
Machine three on the screen? There we go.
So a profile we define, you can set up a profile to be a developer's workstation or an administrative assistance machine or a gamer's machine. And you can actually have combinations of these profiles for different functions of people in your company. So I actually have some profiles set up here, and I've got one called Descent Gamers. And inside Descent Gamers, you can define all the software that needs to make up that profile. So if I come into our RPM list that makes up the Descent Gamer, you see here that we've got D1X in here, and that's the RPM name for Descent. And that is going to be installed. You can also remove software with profiles if you want to remove insecure packages or things like that off the system. So I already have this profile set up. What I need to do is I need to actually link this to the different computers that I want to affect. Now, because we're directory-based, we don't have to link it to every single machine.
What directory are you using?
Well, in this case, we're using LDAP's or Netscape's LDAP server. This is iPlanet 411 is what we're running against in the back end.
Are you forced to use Netscape, or can you use anybody's directory?
No, we actually have an XML interface between Cosmos and the back end. So not only can you use a various number of LDAP directories, you can also use SQL or basically any back end data store. You
awesome.
Just need to write an XML interface or write to the XML interface. So I have our policy here, or our profile here, and what I'm going to do is come in and link that now to the machines I want to affect. And over here on the left, I've got several different groups of machines. I've got Caldera machines, and I'm going to install this on Caldera and Red Hat here.
Where's my machine in there?
Your machine is underneath this Caldera container right there. This
laptop.
Lap
okay.
One is what you called it.
Okay.
So I'm going to go in and I'm going to search for Caldera here and select the container that you're in and submit that and link this profile to that entire container of machines.
Okay, why don't you go submit that event?
Well, I also want to do it on the Red Hat machines at the same time.
Which are located on which on our HP stack over there.
You mean you're actually administering Red Hat as well?
That's right. Yeah, we are not specific to our distribution. This will work on all the distributions, and we're actually going to install Descent on both that HP stack, which has Red Hat running on it, and then some of these compacts and your laptop, which have Caldera.
Well, Red Hat's a good game platform.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and submit that change, and it's going to go out and notify these machines. Now, there's two ways we can notify the systems that there are changes.
Now, wait a minute. You submitted it. You're telling me that this is updating right now?
That's right. Those machines are now updating, and they're getting Red Hat, and so is your laptop. So you can either submit the events, and we have an event system that will go out and notify the systems that changes have been made in their profiles, and then they'll go out and discover those changes and make themselves what those profiles describe. The other way you can do it is through polling. So you can, if you have a firewall or you have a dial-up connection, you can set those machines to actually come into the repository, see what the changes are at a scheduled interval. You can do it once a week or once a day or however you want to schedule that. So we have the ability to both push the changes out to the systems or have them pull us for the changes that are made.
I see.
So you should be good to go. You should have Descent on there.
I haven't touched my system, though.
Well, of course not.
Okay, let's see if it's there. Let's switch to machine 2 and look. I'll be darned. D1X is actually
awesome.
Installed.
Magic. This is Linux?
You're telling me it's over here as well.
I'm telling you.
I gotta see this to believe it.
I'm telling you that it's installed on all those systems.
Let's see. Let's start one up here.
I
can reach up here.
No one ever believes what I say.
he's an engineer.
That's
an engineer, okay? Go ahead and talk, and I'll just see if I'll just...
Okay, so on machine 3, I'm going to show you the real way to determine if it's installed. One way is, sure enough, you can go walk and look like he has to do to see it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to come up to this container above all my machines, and I'm going to go search them. I can search for software that's installed or hardware that's on the machines. I'm going to go out and search and see if D1X is installed on these machines. So I'll submit this search, and when I come back, sure enough, here's a list of all these Red Hat machines, the Caldera machines, and his laptop are all listed up here saying that they have Descent installed on them.
Awesome.
Oh, man, I'm getting a neckache over here. So you can see it, you can see that, and I have to walk over here and do that, so I don't even need to do that.
That's right. Cosmos has the ability to do both hardware and software inventory. Not only can we update the software, but then we can tell you what's on the machine as far as both the hardware and the software. And if
What if somebody removes or adds software or hardware? Say they want to take RAM out and take it home and stick it in their game machine.
Then we're going to know that and come after them.
Wow.
This is good.
So I'm going to come into these Red Hat machines, and I can either, you already saw the search, but if I open up any of these computers, I have hardware and software in here, and I come down and click on the software inventory of this, and it's going to pull up here on the right-hand side all of the software that's installed on that machine. And I can go in and click on any one of these and get all the details about that RPM, the files it uses, what it requires to install, the description, and all the typical information you'd expect to get out of an RPM.
So when I want to install a package and it has dependencies, what's going to happen?
Well, we actually configure those out for you. You notice that in this case, I installed Descent on these machines. Well, Descent won't install by itself.
Uh-huh.
And you notice all I specified in the package was Descent. If I come down here to the software scan, this last software scan that we ran on this, it'll tell me that it actually installed 3 RPMs, not just Descent. We went out and calculated all the dependencies that that package needed and then also brought those down. So administrators don't have to go through and do this by hand. We'll figure it out on the fly and actually put those packages down on there for you.
Very good.
So we've got the hardware and software done here, and we're able to search that. I can also come in here and now search for any piece of hardware I want on these systems. So, for instance, I'm going to come in and see who has ATI graphics cards installed on them. So I just searched the vendor being ATI, and when I come back, I see that it looks like we have 3 Turbo machines, Turbo Linux machines that have ATI, and our Caldera machines all have ATI graphics cards here as well.
Very nice.
So not only can we manage hardware and software on Linux on these machines, but like you can see here, we do it on all the distributions.
So if I wanted to push driver updates, I could push them the same way?
Absolutely. Now that I've searched for this particular piece of hardware, down below I can create now a group or a profile based on the results of that search, and then I can push out updated drivers for this ATI card just to those machines and not affect the rest of the users on the network.
Okay. Tell me about some of the other things in there. I see a number of things. For example, the actions part. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the actions are what allow us to actually put everything in place. Now, I mentioned earlier that we have the ability to push things out to systems or configure them to pull our system. So you do that through actions. And if you come in here, for instance, I have an action here called Rebooter.
Ooh.
And it'll
ooh.
Actually go out. And if I come into the script here, you'll see that it just runs init 6. And I can associate this to all of these same machines we just put descent on, push that out and reboot all those machines. Now, with the scripts, you can do anything you want. We have some default programs that ship in Cosmos, like our software inventory, our hardware inventory, our RPM checker. We also have some threshold management, which will let you monitor systems and monitor how many users are logged in and if processes are hogging the CPU.
Or memory. Okay.
And at the same time, when any of those systems detect that, we have a notification system which you can configure to either send SNMP traps or SMTP email.
Okay.
Out to a page or whatever you want. And all of our SNMP messages are registered, and we have a MIB file, so if you've got a management console, you can actually get alerts on your console that someone has removed hardware out of one of your Linux boxes.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
And the guys in black suits will show up and escort you out.
What about security?
As far as security, everything that we do as far as getting to our system from here is done through SSL. Now, in this case, I'm sure some of you have already noticed, that thing's unlocked up there. Well, for this demo, we didn't set up a secure web server, but all of this can be put behind a secure web server, and the data will be encrypted through SSL, and then when the clients go to talk, they also have an SSL connection to the repository. So all of our connections are secure when we're traveling across the net.
How about managing security patches and updates?
Absolutely. Just as I pushed out Descent Game out to all these systems, I could just as easily have been pushing out a new secure shell, which we get notifications all the time, and update all my systems or remove packages that I know are insecure on the systems.
What about large Beowulf clusters? Does it provide any benefit there?
Well, certainly, because you don't have to now go to each node and modify anytime there's a new update or someone wants some software out on there. You don't have to go to each node. You can just create this profile and then profile the machines and hit the submit button, and all those machines will receive that
and
get themselves updated.
That's incredible.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Calvin and Mike. So let me just recap. We have a management system that's ready to scale with the Internet across all Linux platforms, eventually across Unix platforms, so that we can manage these systems, these specialized devices, and scale to the volumes that we need to. And it's the future now. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Really appreciate it. Just in wrapping this up, clearly, what we've shown, all of the, these are all issues, these are all items that need to be addressed as we try to cross the chasm for Linux. Clearly, through what you've seen of Caldera's own innovation, as well as what we acquire through the SCO acquisition, we address, clearly, many of the needs to helping Linux cross that chasm. We are committed to Linux. We are committed to the industry, and we're committed to making Linux the number one open Internet platform in the industry. Thank you very much. We would like to give you a couple of minutes, because we've covered a lot, and there's a lot here, to open up to questions. And if I can't answer them, then we've got some very capable individuals to answer them for you. Please, feel free to ask some questions.
Do you have any plans to integrate resource management in with Cosmos? I'm looking at like a large enterprise where you might want to track disk space by organization or user, do chargeback, that sort of thing.
Calvin, you want to take that one?
We have a number of plans for the future. That's certainly a possibility. There's some things we can do in there. We do have some threshold management today where we do monitor disk utilization and memory utilization and process utilization, so it would tie well into that, and I would assume that that'll be somewhere in our future plans, yes.
Excellent. Thank you. Next.
I was wondering, do you guys support non-RPM-based distros like Slackware?
Yeah, go ahead.
In the current version that you're seeing here, it is RPM-based only. The technology is actually, we actually plug in a module to handle the RPMs. So what we're looking at doing is developing a number of other plugins, but also allowing the open source to be able to develop those and handle the different types of packages as well. So,
yeah, the beauty of this is it's architected to do that. In fact, it's architected to go into, you know, the different Unix package managements and others. It's just a module that needs to be written. It's very, very well architected. Somebody else?
You mentioned several issues that need to be addressed to cross the chasm. Can you give us some examples of where you think Linux stands very well and already across the chasm?
Well, in most areas, I would say the one area that it has a foothold, or at least a toehold, is in the Internet server platform. Again, you have to be clear on the definition of what it means to be on the other side of the chasm. You clearly have to have broad acceptance among IT environments. It has to be distributed through most businesses. Clearly, we have probably the single largest excitement around Linux, but in many areas we are not even close to crossing the chasm. Okay, that's what I mean. These are many of the components that have to be there in order for mainstream IT adoption of Linux. Now, clearly, we're on the peripheral of that. There's places we're making footholds, but there's much to be done.
Yeah, I'm a director of MIS for a holding company, and so we actually have several companies that are using SCO now.
Yes.
I wondered if you could give me a general time frame as to when those applications that currently run under SCO might be available under Unix. And I realize, or under Linux, I realize that's a broad question.
Yeah, but there's actually, we're going to go in and actually demo some of these technologies at Forum next week. And so you'll actually be able to see what we're doing. What you'll see at Forum next week is actually Linux, the full Linux, running on a UnixWare kernel that scales on the high-end systems very, very well. The next step is, as we talked about, is providing the interfaces for the open server platform to run on Linux. And that is not technologically that difficult. So we'll have more information next week as we start to roll out that product roadmap. It won't be complete next week, but clearly we'll have forthcoming information there. And let me re-emphasize something here. We are not going to force anyone to move anywhere, but we will make it compelling and as easy as possible for them to choose to move when they want to. And Linux will be the glue, literally, that resides across. It will be the platform that people develop to.
Thanks.
Will Cosmos be able to manage my open server and UnixWare platforms as well as the Linux platforms?
Yes, the answer is yes. The timing is the question. We haven't announced when, but we will definitely across the entire, what we call the open internet platform, Cosmos will scale across all of those platforms. Okay?
Oh, yep. I just want to continue. How about the Windows NT server? Are you going to look into it or not? Like to manage the NT server stations?
Again, the way it's architected is very flexible. We are not in the first release looking to go out and manage NT. But clearly, the way it's interfaced, it's designed with open standards on the back end, and we're using open standards, the protocols and things on the front end. So it's very modular. Clearly, someone can do that, and as we make that available open source, that's a task that people could easily address.
With the acquisition of SCO, is it likely that UnixWare would become open source?
We do have plans.
Our commitment and what we've said publicly is that all of our technologies that we own, we will make access to the source available with the products. When, how, under what license is something that we will define as we... that's our commitment, and we will live up to that commitment.
What happens about Project Bonteri? Because that conflicts with the IE64 Linux, 64-bit Linux.
Okay, if we do our job right in making Linux scale over like UnixWare to the degree that everybody's... that we know we can. May I ask, some people have said, well, people have tried this in the past, but they haven't been that successful. May I suggest, we don't have any ulterior motives for not making it successful. Technologically, it has not been the reason why it hasn't done it before. There's always some other motive, right? And so, to talk about Monterey, clearly we want to make sure that we have the same level of Linux integration on Monterey that we would have in our UnixWare product. Now, we don't control, we have a great relationship. It's a joint development relationship with IBM, which we intend to preserve. But they have similar interests. And so this is really a very synergistic, transaction is great for all of the major partners as they have already wanted to embrace Linux moving forward. Now, let me address one other aspect of your question, which is that the Monterey project is in conflict with the IE64 Linux project. I don't believe it's in conflict at all. Now, clearly, we have tremendous vested interest in the IE64 Linux project, and with the acquisition of SCO, they've been doing a lot. So you combine those, and we've got one of the more comprehensive offerings, I believe, on the IE64 Linux. So that's clearly an area that we're very committed to. But like UnixWare, there's elements of the Monterey kernel that are more scalable, okay? Now, on the IE64 platform, I don't know how long of window that is, but today it's a little bit more robust and more scalable than the IE64 Linux is today. Now, I'm not saying that that over time that won't change. But let me address one other thing. Sorry, you're getting all of it through one question, but clearly we are going to add components back to the Linux kernel. It's on both IE32 and IE64 platforms. We'll work with Linus and everyone in order to make that available. That will take some time. And as I mentioned earlier, I don't know that over time you can have a single kernel. In fact, I know you can't. That will scale, you know, the breadth of IT technology needs. So I think we're looking in the Linux community at having multiple kernels. So,
multiple Linux kernels or multiple Unix kernels?
Multiple Linux kernels as well over time.
Thank you.
Okay, you bet.
Would you do me a favor then? Would you call them and ask them to transfer?
Mike, you're mic'd. Any other questions? Yes, sir. What license are we looking at for Cosmos? And that could be true of any of our technologies. What we're looking at, all of the open source licenses. There's quite a few, and there's validation for a lot of the licenses. In some cases, we will use GPL, others will use BSD, others will use maybe some other license, but we haven't determined. It will depend on the technology itself. Clearly, there's elements of Cosmos that we want to get out as a standard across the industry, so there's some good reason for that. When will Cosmos be available? Someone said about the same time you can buy ski passes up in Utah. we're getting towards the end of this month, we'll actually be doing our open beta. We have it in closed beta, I guess, and then open beta is a little bit later. But we have gone through a number of testing environments. We've actually had it in large Beowulf clustered in environments, and so it's actually pretty... It's moving along very, very well. And in fact, if you're interested in participating in that closed beta, Eric Hughes is going to shoot me, but please come by the booth. Yeah, he's right here. Contact him. Hey, he what? So if you want to participate in that, please do so. Any other questions? Yes, sir. The only aspect of SCO that's not being acquired is the Tarantella component with, what's the other component? It's all related to Tarantella. There's the professional services is coming over. The entire server division is coming over, and all of server technologies. Now, there's one element of Open Server that is not coming over. We don't own the IP. We just own all the rights for distribution, ongoing development for the Open Server, and that has to do with tax and other considerations. Any other questions? Thank you very, very much. We appreciate you coming.